Hey, I'm Alex.
I'm Liz.
And welcome to Nap Time, the podcast where two mostly fully functioning adults try to have stimulating conversation around a sleeping child. Ooh. Welcome. This is our first of probably two episodes on the Red Rising trilogy by Pierce Brown.
Obviously, insane spoilers ahead, so if you haven't read it and you are planning to, stop listening now, but then come back and listen afterwards.
There are no spoilers, however, for Iron Cold, the 2017 or 2018 book that came out.
So this is just for the trilogy.
We've read the trilogy and then the graphic novels about the Sons of Ares. Well, one of us has.
I'm slacking. Synopsis time.
My favorite time.
Yes. So, synopsis of the trilogy, just to remind everybody what happened. Hundreds of years in the future, peace has been achieved through the implementation of a color-coded caste system through forced genetics. At the top, there are the golds, think Greek gods, through a series of colors, like the silvers, coppers, obsidians, etc., down to the reds residing at the bottom. Enter Darrow. He is a red helldiver. Remember that term, helldiver, because you'll hear it a million times. And he lives in a mining colony on Mars. The reds believe that they are mining helium-3 to help terraform Mars so new colonists can come. When Darrow's wife, Io, is killed and becomes a martyr for the Reds, Darrow decides that he has no reason left to live and gets himself killed. But his suicide attempt is thwarted by his uncle and the Sons of Ares, who are a red terrorist cell that want to overthrow the Golds, and Darrow learns his life is a lie. Mars has actually been livable for years, and the Reds are actually slaves. Darrow is chosen by the Sons to infiltrate Gold Society and overthrow the Society, which is the governing body of the Golds. Darrow has been turned into a Gold through a process called carving. He proves to be a formidable warrior and basically a monster. After winning the Institute, think Hogwarts meets Hunger Games, Darrow gets in with the Archgovernor, who ordered his wife's death. He also falls in love with the Archgovernor's daughter and is entered into a blood feud with one of the most powerful Gold families. Oops. After he falls out of grace with the Archgovernor, discovers that Io had been pregnant when she died, and now has nothing to lose, Darrow turns the blood feud into a civil war. This seeds chaos in the society and, ironically, brings him back into the Archgovernor's good graces. Darrow proceeds to alienate everyone who loves him, lies constantly. No, seriously, he lies constantly. And finally, after being revealed as a red and loads of bloodshed, Darrow manages to bring about the death of the sovereign who rules the society and put his new girlfriend on the throne. And everyone lives happily ever after.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the whole series.
That's it. We're okay. We're done. So that was fun.
So three books. I don't think we mentioned their names up top.
Oh, yeah.
Red Rising, Golden Sun, and Morning Star. And I think it's interesting, just a thought I had about your synopsis, that
it's mostly the first book.
The first book, which,
yeah.
I don't know what that means.
It's because it's the setup.
Yeah.
And I guess it's what I remember the most.
Well, books two and three were mostly just fighting.
Yeah.
And then, like,
a string of fighting.
Cooler fighting and changing alliances.
Yeah.
Which is basically the drama of books two and three.
Yeah.
It's like switching sides and stuff.
And wait, what? I thought we were friends.
Mm-hmm.
What would you, at a glance, rate the whole series?
I think I rated each book 4 stars on my Goodreads. I would give it 4 sling blades out of 5 for just overall excitement, adventure, and, you know, violence. Which I don't normally support that sort of thing, but, you know, it was a pretty good read. I'm not gonna lie.
Very violent.
Yeah.
But why did it lose 1 sling blade?
There missed opportunities. I would say, overall, there were a few people who could have been really great villains who were just sort of problems more than interesting villains.
Obstacles.
Or antagonists, yeah. And then and main characters as well have that same issue, that the most endearing, some of the side characters are probably the most endearing and memorable. And Darrow, mm-hmm. as the person we have to spend the most time with, is probably the least bearable of all, besides maybe like Aja.
Ugh, Aja.
So Darrow's probably right below her in my book, which I feel like we probably just offended most of the Red Rising fan base. Or I did, at least. You haven't seen it yet.
I voted Darrow most punchable, so I wanted to punch him through the whole series. Right. I also gave it each book 4 stars, and I would give the series 4 Sling Blades out of 5 as well. For similar reasons, like, it was really fun. It was a very exciting read. I was very, very on the edge of my seat a lot, especially in Morningstar. But,
the third book. Yeah.
But a lot of the ideas just kind of felt recycled to me, like, especially when we got to the Institute in the first book, I actually laughed out loud because, like, oh, okay, so this is Hogwarts. Oh, but no, actually, it's the Hunger Games. It's both. And just being split into the houses and stuff. And I mean, it's, you can only be so creative about that kind of thing. But it just felt very recycled. And then there was so much missed character development. I felt like a lot of the characters were fairly static or one-dimensional until the last book, Morningstar, and then there was suddenly a lot of development, and I wish that could have just been in the whole series.
Yeah, I think on my review for the third book, that I believe what I said was, I wish the person who wrote this book had written the first 2 books in the series, because something happened to Pierce Brown as he was writing Morningstar. Either him or his editor or something, he found some sort of well of authorship deep down that he hadn't been accessing in the first 2 books. I mean, they're all pretty good, but he definitely brings up, I actually am genuinely excited to continue the saga with Iron Gold, especially just reading the back cover. I know he writes from more perspectives than just Darrow, and so I think he's in a better spot after writing this series to do that. And yeah, I think he's promising, especially being kind of early on in his career. Like, one thing, actually, I think, kind of similar to what I was saying about the third book, is that I almost wish he had written the series later. Like, I feel like there was actually a lot of possibilities, kind of like you said, missed potential, where it seems like I wish he had kind of, like, messed around with some other stuff or in some other books and not had... I mean, I know these books aren't as popular as some, but they've become pretty popular, and I'm pretty sure
it's
the movies
growing.
I think actually it's going to be a TV show, not a movie.
Oh, good.
Is what I heard or read. But, you know, it's actually fairly popular, and so I almost wish that he had written something like this that was kind of popular and kind of slowly grown, and then written this series, because it would have been a lot better.
I feel like he was definitely, you can see he was still finding his voice as an author in this series, because he switches back and forth between being very just prose and then suddenly waxing very eloquent and poetical, and like it felt like he couldn't decide if he was like a philosophical writer like Neil Gaiman, who writes in the abstract more, or if he's just a very like black and white almost engineer in the way he writes, like Brandon Sanderson, who also can write incredibly beautiful things, but his he doesn't do as much wordplay as Neil Gaiman. So I felt like Pierce Brown was kind of still figuring out, even by the third book, still figuring out his author voice. But and sometimes it would startle me that I'd be reading along in the middle of some big, huge battle, and then there's like half a paragraph that's contemplating the meaning of life all of a sudden. I'm like, whoa, jarring. Oh, back to the action. Okay. But it was still fun to read. And those would be the lines that I had, like, on the Kindle. It shows if it's a popular highlight. Those were the ones that always had, like, 1,000 highlights.
Yeah. I know. I always kind of resist highlighting those. I know. I don't want to be part of the crowd. I refuse. But sometimes you have to. Because it's like they're popular for a reason.
It's true.
And clearly we liked this series.
Oh, really? I really, really enjoyed it.
I would say 4 stars is pretty good.
I also loved that I went into the series knowing nothing about it. That we picked up the first book.
Yeah, we came in pretty cold.
Yeah, we picked up the first book because it was like on sale or something.
Well, no, it... Right? No, I was on Reddit and on like the Stormlight Archive subreddit, and some people were posting about, because you know the third Stormlight Archive book came out last fall, and everyone's, oh crap, we have to wait. But then some people in January or whatever Iron Gold came out, they were like, oh, but we have a new Pierce Brown book, new Red Rising. And I was like, oh, my people like this.
Okay, so well, you knew something about it. I knew nothing about it except the cover had red wings on it, and I needed something new to read. And to listen to being home with Perrin. And so I just started playing it. I'm like, oh, I know nothing about it. And I'm glad that I went into it with no expectations. Mm-hmm. And then it was really fun.
Yeah. No, it was really cool. So one thing, I don't know if we talked about this in our little intro podcast, but we do the, as Kindle calls it, the immersion reading. We usually do ebook and audiobook. So... a big shout out to the audiobook narrator for this trilogy.
Oh yeah, he was great.
Tim Gerard Reynolds, I think was his name. And
he was really
very
good.
Like it helps a lot.
Yeah, he was really great.
I would say probably half. I mean,
I definitely liked listening to it more than I liked reading it.
Yes. Yeah. I would agree with that. Yeah, he was a really good narrator and it helped. Mm-hmm. Which sad story? I think I read that.
No,
it's different narrators. I think it's multiple because there's a. I think there's a female, but I might be wrong about that.
Anyway. No, it's okay if there's because he's the voice of Darrow. So if there's different voices, that's fine.
We'll see. They might be great.
It's true. All right.
So actually, I was thinking, what if we did? Since we just kind of, I mean, we said some good things, but we also kind of. Focus on the negative. So what if before we dove into the book, we actually did favorite moments? And then we can come back to other favorite moments later, because we have multiple.
Yes.
But we can do maybe our top ones here up front.
Okay.
Why don't you go ahead?
So I think my all-time favorite moment in the entire series is in Morning Star in the chapter The Goblin and the Gold, where Severo... like finally grows that he's been this little snot fest this whole time, and like so fun and super sassy, but he's just kind of been a big kid, and he's got
a lot to prove, and
he's been living in his dad's shadow and the shadow that the huge shadow that the Golds cast,
right?
That he's a really low tier Gold and he's short for a Gold. And well, it turns out because he's half red, and
well, but his dad was
already
his dad was already like people would call him a pixie and
or a bronzy. So he was a low tier Gold and just has been trying to prove his salt this whole time, and then finally in this moment where he could have just let it happen, you know, he could have let Cassie
set up the moment a little more.
So, is when Cassius has been, who killed his dad, has been put onto trial by the Obsidians and the other low colors.
That are part of their crew.
Yeah, so, that are part of the rebel crew. And it's basically, it's a lynch mob.
Right.
And they're just like hanging Golds. And they've brought up Cassius. And
that's after... what sparks it? They discover something
Narrow
about...
gets killed.
Oh, yeah. After they
Darrow's
kill,
uncle
Darrow's
is
uncle.
Killed, and Darrow's uncle has been, like, a hero of the Revolution.
The Reds, yeah.
And of the Reds, especially. And he's been killed, so everyone just kind of freaks out. And, so Sephi, who's the leader of the Obsidians, is going to hang Cassius. And then Severo comes up. And he puts on this huge show of being Ares, because he's inherited the mantle from his father. And he claims Cassius as his property because Cassius killed his father. So if anyone's going to have revenge on him, it's Severo. And he sets up that Cassius is a murderer and says, and what do we do with murderers? And everybody's chanting for Cassius's blood. So he pushes him off to hang him. And then Severo goes on about himself and says, I am Ares. I am Severo Barca. And I've killed all these people. And it's kind of funny the way that he says it, that he's killed all these people with his razor and guns, blah, blah, blah. And he says, and so many more with like sharp pointy sticks. And he says that I am a murderer. Mm-hmm. And what do we do with murderers? Mm-hmm. And forces everybody to face what they're doing mm-hmm. and that they're not better. Mm-hmm. And hangs himself and forces them to release him. If they're going to release him because he's a murderer, they have to release Cassius too. And the last line of that chapter is Severo standing up in front of everybody after he's now almost killed himself mm-hmm. to put them in their place. And he says, I am Severo Barca and I am no longer afraid. And that was the most moving line for mm-hmm. me in the mm-hmm. entire series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, for the Severo value, that was a really good moment. Talking about that, it makes me want to see what's going to happen in the next saga because I also feel like though that moment's kind of a contradiction in the series overall, and that it is a good moment for Severo, but then also all the development and everything they've done has been built on like
murder,
killing everyone,
right?
So I'm just interested to see what happens.
Right.
With that.
But I think it's different. All the killing they're doing too has been in war. And this is just them being a lynch yeah. mob.
Right.
And so he was shutting that down. But it is true that their whole thing has been built on killing everybody. But on a more just, it was, I really enjoyed it note, Kavex is also a really great character. He's just funny. The narrator did so well reading Kavex. I just loved that he's this giant gold who's such a sweetie pie and just mm-hmm. laughs at everything all the time in a little childlike laugh and has a pet fox that he feeds jelly beans. What was the fox?
Sophocles.
Sophocles. Mm-hmm. It was just so funny. He just always made my heart warm.
Yeah, he was good. Actually, one of my favorite parts probably has to do with Kavex as well. And at the beginning of Morningstar, right?
I don't remember. Somewhere in Morningstar.
Yeah, it's at the beginning of Morningstar because they have Kavex as a prisoner. And then Ragnar lets him go. And then they all meet up later. And Kavex is talking to Darrow. And they're talking about Mustang. And Kavex basically says, like, you know, they're talking about how Mustang is actually just a genuine person, actually wants like political change and doesn't just want kind of violent revolution. Like, she doesn't want the status quo. Like, she's kind of the real deal, or at least we hope mm-hmm. so. And he's explaining to Darrow, he's like, you know, when basically Mustang was kind of like almost like a niece to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when Mustang played with my kids when she came to live with us or whatever, when she was a kid, I didn't read them the myths of Greece and Rome, of the glories of Greece and Rome. You know, I read them, about Arthur, like King Arthur, and then the carpenter, so like Jesus, right?
And I think he called him the Nazarite.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, at some points they call him the carpenter, at some points the Nazarene. I mean, yeah, the Nazarene. And then so like Vishnu as well. And I just like that part because it pointed to that the series was able to question itself as well and question the kind of deeper questions of the society to where, I mean, we get some of this with Darrow and Severo where they're questioning the bloodshed and the violence and kind of like what you just shared.
Mm-hmm.
But in that moment, I thought it was just a really good speaking to the power of, I mean, this whole series is, like, built on the pantheon both the good and bad aspects, you know, probably mostly the bad aspects, and kind of the glories of Rome. And so then this is like embedded is kind of Cavex being like, no, we have these other stories where we find this power to like have change or whatever. And I really like that. Mm-hmm. And then also another favorite would be any scene with Ragnar.
Yeah.
I would say
Ragnar is too pure.
Probably my favorite.
Too pure.
Yeah. Ragnar and Sevro.
Mm-hmm. I loved their relationship. Mm-hmm. And then you think of like a Great Dane going around with a Chihuahua.
And I mean, what was it at the end of Golden Sun when Darrow takes Mustang to Lycos and he shows her the holocube and he thinks she's left, but she just like sent the ship away with the tracker or whatever. And she's still there.
She's waiting to ambush.
She confronts Darrow and Ragnar comes and it's like, it seems like Ragnar is going to like kill her to save Darrow, or like, you know, that he would be willing to kill her to save Darrow. And then what is it? He ends up like,
he puts down his weapon, doesn't he?
You know, because doesn't she insinuate kind of what other people say that, you know, see Darrow, look, you can't have revolution because
here he is still.
And in hindsight, it's almost like she's testing him in this moment, testing both of them. But she's like, how can you have revolution? Like, your, like, friend is this bloodthirsty animal, Obsidian.
Who clearly can't change. Like, you thought you changed him, but look, you didn't.
But then he, like, bows to Darrow, like, as a friend. You know, not, like, as a master, but he's like, you know, I've chosen to follow this person because he's my friend, and I believe in him, not because of any other reason. And, yeah, I thought that was a really good moment. Mm-hmm.
That he's the shield of Teenos.
Oh, yeah.
I liked Ragnar. And that even at the end, as he dies, he doesn't want to die with weapons in his hands, which is their tradition. Mm-hmm. He wanted to die holding his sister and Darrow instead. Mm-hmm.
A lot of the series is about, like... I mean, now it's interesting that you mentioned Neil Gaiman up top, because I feel like actually a lot of the series is about myth and about culture, like cultural myths and what... like either questioning them or affirming them, you know, because the whole Obsidian society is like, they've been forced. Mythology. Yeah. They like the society is based in Roman and Greek culture. And then they've forced like Norse mythology onto the Obsidians. And anyway, and then like parts of that are awesome, but then also Ragnar kind of rejects an aspect of it at the end of his life. He's like, no, this isn't who I am.
And so with that, I mean, just the themes of the story in general, what did you feel were some of the strong, or maybe like the strongest theme? What did you feel like Pierce Brown was trying to tell you, other than friendship is magic?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Well, now I'm kind of stuck on this whole myth thing. I mean, I feel like the whole idea was that, I mean, and even you compare, I mean, Darrow so often, especially in the later books, he, not even just myth in like the broad sense, but like personal beliefs, cultural beliefs, whatever, because Darrow talks about how, you know, at least when I die, I'll go to the Vale, but the Golds have nothing. And it's like weird the way he says it, because it's almost like he doesn't believe in it, but like he believes in the power of it in his own life, that like, that this is waiting for him, you know, that this, that his like whatever happens, he's at least going to get to be with his family. Mm-hmm. But like the Golds, they only believe in like,
and right now,
this life, you know, kind of to say it that way. Mm-hmm.
And the Obsidians have Valhalla.
Yeah. And it is, I mean, I...
Oh, that's the other thing at the end when Ragnar dies, that he's chosen to give up. He doesn't believe in Valhalla either. He doesn't think he's going to Valhalla. He tells Darrow, I'll be waiting for you in the Vale with Eo. Yeah. I'll build you a house next to my house, but take your time because I'm a slow builder.
Yeah.
Which is just very sweet that it's a very much your people will be my people moment.
Your God will be my God.
No, but yeah, that he's giving up what his beliefs are and taking Darrow's.
I almost feel like, though, that... So I guess what I'm getting at, or kind of what I'm thinking, is that, like, the point of the Vale isn't a comfort for that when I die, at least I can go to the Vale, even though that's how Darrow talks about it. I feel like, especially the thing with Ragnar, shows that the power of the idea of the Vale is that it's like, we're meant, humans are meant to be like a family and like live together in peace, right? And then that's something that influenced how Ragnar lived with Darrow in the present. You know, like, so even though it was this thing at the end of his life and it is this powerful moment, I feel like it almost more reflects actually what happened.
That we're and all that, one people.
Yeah, that, you know, when Darrow gets rescued from the Jackal, that he goes down and they go down, and then, like, it's like Lycos, but I mean, it's different. Tinos, you know, it's like there's this Red Society, and so the thing about the Vale is that it reflects the present. So even though Red life sucks, they have each other, you know, and that they have family. Like, the myths almost speak to what we believe we are as humans, right? It's
right.
It's more than just an afterlife thing. It's a, like, who am I sort of thing. And so, you know, for the Golds, their life is just all about glory. Where for Darrow...
Glory and power and conquering.
Where for Darrow, he's like, you know, it's more, life is about family. People.
And that's what and makes him... That's what makes him different in the Institute.
Yeah.
Too, that he, with the help of Mustang, builds a family, not an army. That they don't keep slaves. They keep their conquered slaves, but the slaves earn their freedom through becoming part of the family and earning trust.
Right.
And that when Tactus goes to rape the girl, instead of just punishing him or just killing him, that he whips Tactus, but then turns around and says, you know, this reflects on me as the leader of this family. And so he has... Well, he tries to have Tactus whip him, but Tactus won't do it because he freaks him out. So he has Pax do it instead.
Which, hello, messianic moment.
But, so that, and that's what sets him apart, is that he creates these bonds and this family that when they're getting ready to leave the Institute, the Archgovernor Augustus tells him, oh, okay, so maybe you were Arch Primus here, but once you leave school, all this dissolves, but it doesn't dissolve. The ties that Darrow has made are deeper than just survival tactics at school.
Do you mind if I talk about the graphic novel? Or their comics, but just a second.
Sure.
It's only 6 issues. So, I mean, so to speak to that, like, when Fitch is at the Institute, he makes this friend, but it ends up, like, that, like, what Nero says to Darrow would happen, that you won't actually have these relationships.
Right.
Like, that's what happens to Fichtner, basically. And, like, the guy who is interrogating Bryn is his old friend.
Oh.
Or whatever. Anyway, and just other stuff. So, yeah, like, so that kind of adds to it, that what Nero said is true. Like, that's how Gold Society works, is that you don't really build these bonds of friendship. Like,
everything power is matters. Everything is a tactic.
Yeah.
To get ahead. But Darrow respects the individuals and not just the plan. And really values them. Which is very hard for him, since his whole goal is to overthrow them.
Yeah.
And that's a big struggle for him.
Yeah.
as he's coming to actually care for people. But then they also show, too, the difference, again, between the Golds and the Reds, that the Reds are, and Darrow as a Red is very familially driven, and he's trying to make this family, and he does, and they do see that and see the difference, but for the Golds, it can only go so far, like with Thistle. Once he starts to try to bring in the Obsidians and gives mm-hmm. Ragnar a razor, mm-hmm. that's too much for Thistle. Mm-hmm. And Thistle is then willing to turn on him, especially once she finds out what he is. Mm-hmm. And, who was the other one? Well, and Roke.
Yeah.
That Roke was his best friend, his brother, but the more that... Although it's kind of twofold for Roke. He's starting to realize all of the darkness that is in Darrow. And that Darrow is, especially without the tempering force of, like, Mustang and family, Darrow is a monster.
Yes.
He just straight up is. And he's fueled by rage. And that's terrifying for Roke, seeing what he's capable of. And all the damage he can cause. But then as soon as Roke finds out that Darrow is a Red, he doesn't even give Darrow a chance. And that, and mm-hmm. any respect, anything he had for him is completely done. Mm-hmm. And he's just willing to turn him over to the Jackal to be tortured.
Roke was very hard part of this series. Because at first I was understanding, but very upset with him that he was upset with Darrow. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like their friendship was such that he could forgive him and kind of move on. And it just seemed like he was so stuck in Gold society that he couldn't grow out of that. And, like, all that's true. But then, towards the end, we finally get, like, Roke's kind of personal... Mm-hmm. motivation for why he...
Because Darrow asks him why.
Yeah, and Roke basically talks about how, yes, it's about the society, but more specifically that under false pretense, Darrow led Roke to kill so many of his own people. And so even where we might look back and say that Darrow's cause was right or even... just in the society, that, like, for Roke as a friend, Darrow lied. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, maybe in another scenario, Roke would have turned on the society.
If Darrow had been honest
from the beginning. I mean, we don't know. I mean, I almost want to say no, that maybe Pierce Brown wrote Roke that he was kind of beyond... He wouldn't turn from Gold Society. Would. Yeah, and I think I believe that, but maybe I kind of hope that maybe if Darrow had been honest, then maybe he would. But it also, we finally do sympathize with Roke when he's like, you know, you weren't honest with me, and then under that lie, you basically made me murder so many people mm-hmm. in this war you started for your own ends. I thought it was something else, mm-hmm. and you started it to overthrow everything I've ever known. Mm-hmm. So,
you know. And caused people that he loved to die.
Yeah.
That, sure, right. Maybe Leah and Quinn...
They
weren't his fault. Yeah. They chose to be where they were and to right. be with him, but if Darrow hadn't been moving in that direction, mm-hmm. they wouldn't have been there and wouldn't have died. Mm-hmm. And especially poor Quinn. I mean, at least Leah was fast, but Quinn was... That was bad.
Yeah.
Beaten to death by Aja. Well, beaten to vegetableness by Aja and then killed by the Jackal. Which, oh my gosh, the Jackal. Okay.
Yeah.
Should we just go talk about the Jackal, or do we want to keep talking about themes? Because now I'm, like, freaking out about Jackal.
Yeah, let's do the Jackal. Because I feel like for both of us that was something awesome, but also kind of another one of those missed opportunities.
Yeah.
So what was interesting, whether in a, like, you know, good or bad way, what was interesting about the Jackal?
Just, he was the one character that really felt fleshed out, like the whole time, that when you first meet him, you don't know it's him. He's pretending to be this really likable, kind of shy, awkward, timid guy. And then when Darrow confronts him with the fact that he knows he's the Jackal, just the curtain falls and he's completely different and is this cold, unfeeling, willing to cut off his own hand by sawing it off person. But then he can come back again, and you think in Morningstar that maybe Darrow, you know, Darrow's friendship is magic business is actually getting to him, and he's changing as well, but he's just been lying and playing everybody the whole way through. And then to see him again in the third book, and he's just twisted, messed up, like psychopath, just full blown letting all his scary out. But it does still feel like the same person.
I wish we could have gotten more of him.
I know. I would have been interested in more of his backstory and understanding exactly how he came to be the way he was. Yeah. Like, Mustang gives us a little bit of insight with the pressure from his dad and the favoritism, and then the mom killing herself. That Jackal took that really, really hard. That she left him, and then Mustang said, oh, I won't leave you, but she does. And but just to discover how cold and calculating and crazy he is, and just but he's not crazy either is a thing, you know. He's like terrifyingly sane.
He's like a sociopath,
that he just doesn't feel,
and
it's only for him. Everything he does is for him. And so seeing all of his plans, but I think the most, like, it gave me chills moment was with Quinn. That in Morningstar, he seems like he's working really hard to try to save her life. And is, like...
You mean the second book?
Right. In Golden Sun. Yeah. He's trying to save her and can't. But then in Morningstar... he reveals that actually he killed her by shoving a piece of her cracked skull into her brain. Just because he didn't want to have to deal with her drooling. And, but he bet that Roke would still have loved her, even as a vegetable, and kind of laughs at Roke. Like, that's Roke being weak, that still would have loved and been loyal to Quinn. So he was kind of like trying to spare everybody from that by just offing her.
I did almost wonder if that was a lie. But I mean, either way, he's so messed up. I mean, whether he killed her and then fessed up, or he couldn't save her and then he made that up just to mess with Roke. Either way, he's a really messed up person. But like, I couldn't decide. I guess I need to ask other readers like what they think, or ask Pierce, because
I was surprised that he was trying so hard to save her. In Golden Sun, like that was something that felt out of character for the Jackal.
Well, it also felt like friendship is magic. You know?
That Darrow was bringing out this goodness in him, but it was really just him playing Darrow. I feel like the whole time he was, from the beginning, he didn't know Darrow was a red. He found out he was a red, but Darrow was a means to an end the whole time for him, and. By acting like he was trying to save Quinn, then he got himself in further into Darrow's good graces. And that Darrow was like, oh, okay, the Jackal actually isn't this sick puppy. He has this goodness in him.
Yeah. Not quite.
And I like, too, the kind of yin and yang of him and Mustang being twins, that Mustang is this just, like, really good person who has faults, but I wish she had a few more faults. She was a little unbelievably good sometimes, and how was she who she was when her family is all who they were? But, you know,
it happens. Telemannus.
Oh, yeah.
The Telemannus family.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. But that, so she is goodness and he is not. Very much not, but they're twins. And so I liked that balance mm-hmm. with them of like fire and ice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Jackal is someone who makes me both very excited but also terrified of any screen adaptations of this. Yeah. Well, terrified in this, not in just the sense of that he'd be freaking terrifying, but that I feel like he's the sort of person that, like, in a movie, I'd be so terrified they'd cast, like, Jared Leto.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that.
Thankfully,
like,
Jared Leto is too old.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Someone who would take it, I don't know how to, like, not that I mean take it too far, but be so over the top. Mm-hmm. Instead of just, like, cold and creepy, they'd be, like,
wacky. Well, we need is young Anthony Hopkins.
Yes.
Young Anthony Hopkins yeah, someone to play who can the just, Jackal.
Like, yeah, play it straight.
It would be you know? So good.
Yeah.
Anthony Hopkins. No one can play a sociopath like Anthony Hopkins. I don't know what this is about him, but hey.
So our fan casting for the Jackal is young Anthony Hopkins.
Yes.
All right. We should do that, too. We should do that in part two. We should cast the... I mean, I'm, like, terrible with actors, so that actually probably wouldn't be that interesting, but we could try it.
We'll research.
We can research. Yeah. I'll have to spend some time thinking about this. My answer will all be that guy from...
You know, that blank, one person that, that played that thing that did was the one and was great.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah. Anyway. So what else? What was another...
Like... Oh, well, with them, looking at... The Jackal and Mustang.
Yeah.
I feel like Pierce Brown spent a lot of time kind of trying to talk about what strength is and what strength looks like. And the Jackal is one kind of strength and power, right? That he does what he thinks needs to be done, and he controls all these people and manipulates all these things and has all of this power. But he's this broken little boy. That when he made this maze that his sister solved right away, he beat himself in the face because he wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And that's what he does as an adult, too, but in different ways. Mm-hmm. And it punishes
himself.
It's like,
himself, well, it's like what? It's a Kylo Ren, right?
Yeah.
The sort of...
There's all this like power, but he's very weak. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side is... Mustang, and she has maybe not the same kind of power that Adrius/the Jackal has, but she has the emotional strength. She's solid in herself mm-hmm. and who she is and what she believes, mm-hmm. and she doesn't stand alone.
And hello, she gave birth and then
right? jump, pop baby out, go right back to war.
You know.
Whatever.
Yeah.
A man wrote this book. But
I'm still forgiving it because I'm still a little unclear on the timeline.
It's there. True.
So
it's true.
I'm giving a little like leeway because I would need to go back and like check out for sure like what was the time frame from X to Z, whatever. Right. So but probably it's off. I mean, anyway, the fact that she had a child at any time and then within his first year of life left to go fight the revolution. You know what I mean? It's still pretty epic.
You do what you need to do.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's still epic regardless of whether it was right away or not. Right like, away. She's still mm-hmm. very...
Very driven.
Yes. Like, it doesn't mean, you know...
And that takes a lot of emotional strength. To be mm-hmm. able to do that, to do what she needed to do to make a better world for her son and for her people. She is strength in numbers. That she doesn't go into things alone. Mm-hmm. She has backup. She has her people. Mm-hmm. And the Jackal is solo crazy.
One thing I was confused about is that, you know, if she had this child and she believed in Darrow, but when we meet her in the third book, she's suing for peace with this sort of coalition meeting unbeknownst to the Jackal. Or they think he doesn't know. Does he know?
He doesn't.
He doesn't know, but he... Anyway. So, for a bit of time, I was kind of confused about that. Like, why would she be working towards that? But actually, reflecting on it, it's that she's... She is an independent person, you know? And so she was like, well, if Darrow's not here or whatever, I'm going to keep this going the way I have to, you know? So she was going to go about it differently.
And going about it in the way that was most likely to keep her alive.
Yeah. But she, you know, she's not dependent on Darrow, mm-hmm. but she believes in the cause. So then when he's back, it's like, okay, let's do it. But... Mm-hmm. She's not just waiting for him to come back either.
Right.
She's like, okay, new plan.
And even when he does come back, she's not sure if he's safe or not. Mm-hmm. Which is why she doesn't tell him about their son until the end.
Little packs.
Baby packs. That she's observing and being sure first. Because she's realized what he's capable of. And who he is. And that he is this sort of unstoppable, monstrous force. Which, can we talk about for a second at the end about how he ripped out the Jackal's tongue with his bare hand? Like, what on earth? And then after that, she does still tell him about their kid. I'm just saying, if she was watching this whole time to see if he was dangerous or not, yikes. Anyway.
You know what, we have some other themes I think we want to talk about and some other favorite moments. Let's save those. Let's save some of the other stuff. Let's finish up with just like, what was the coolest thing in this book? There's a lot of tech, even though it wasn't really sci-fi, there's a lot of tech and there's a lot of futurology in a way, you know? So
right.
It was set in our world, just...
Well, century, our galaxy.
Our solar system. I mean, our galaxy, but even more narrowly, our solar system, like, hundreds of years from now, but still, like, Earth is there, mm-hmm. you know, and there's all this stuff. So, I can start. I think I'm kind of one of those people who, the superpower question, I probably 9 times out of 10 will go with flying, because I'm boring.
Well, and flight would be so dang convenient.
Dang convenient and very cool. All that to say, even though they're kind of the most like simple thing, I think grab boots were like my favorite thing actually. That it's just like they can kind of hop, and it's flight, but it also seems like a lot more hot, like more of a hopping. And then linked to the grab boots, there were sci-fi elements. It wasn't like Star Wars or something, you know. It got detailed. At some parts.
Not how things work.
And so I liked when they would talk about, oh yeah, we're set at point whatever, Earth Grav here.
Oh yeah.
And where they were on the ship, they would change it to affect people who were used to something else. And mm-hmm. they would go to another planet.
Using the gravity as a tactic.
Yeah. And, you know, I have no idea how legit any of that is. Or if Pierce Brown's just kind of like, you know, making it up. But
I bought it and I
liked that we talked about it and mm-hmm. I thought it was
fun, the different ways that mm-hmm. they were affected by things. And when they were in Earth gravity and stuff, I was like, man, so this is what it's like to feel fat.
Yeah.
Because you suddenly felt so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that carving was really cool.
Scary.
Very terrifying.
Freaking scary.
Yeah, cool. That they made Darrow, who's sort of average human size and ability, mm-hmm. into a gold that's like a giant mm-hmm. compared to Red's. Mm-hmm. And like changed the density of his bones.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I want to know though how his brain wasn't like bouncing around in his skull. But details. So that was really cool. And I liked the other things, how carving works in life, that Cassius loses his arm. Oh, Cassius has an arm again because carvers. Or that there's actually griffins and these other crazy monsters because just kind of cool, fun combo creatures because the carvers made them. Because
Because we can.
Because yeah, because they can. So they did.
Aren't there like?
So why not?
Isn't there a Sphinx? Or did I make that up? It's just the Griffin.
That's just the Griffin.
I think I made that up.
But there's,
I wanted there to be.
There's other crazy creatures, and there's girls with wings and mermaids mm-hmm. and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, it's they can, and so why not? Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of cool.
It was very cool. Also, what you're saying about covering, my pitch to Pierce Brown for, like, a side story is, like, carving Jekyll and Hyde story. So, or not Jekyll and Hyde, but carving Frankenstein story where it's, like, makes something, it goes wrong it or goes whatever. Wrong. Creates a
I'm
monster.
I'm sure Mickey, you know, probably, I mean, that's kind Mickey of, probably has a monster somewhere.
I mean, Darrow sometimes kind of is. That kind of is the story we have already. Like, Darrow's Oops. Like Frankenstein's monster, Mickey's monster.
Probably, I think, actually, the monster would be, what's-his-face from the first book.
Oh, yeah.
What was his name? Well, the other red.
Okay, but the thing is, try to think of his name while I say what I'm going to say.
Titus?
Yes, Titus. Yes. That's correct.
That his brain didn't, he snapped and just was super rage. And was, like, raping and killing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Titus.
He was scary.
He was scary. But also part of the monster thing is it went wrong, but also...
It makes sense.
But part of why he was a monster was he wasn't able to grow into gold.
Mm-hmm.
Grow into the... I mean, the aberration that is gold society, that it's like, we're better than everyone, and that's cool. Like, we've earned our peace and our formal academy, you know, because we're better. And
mm-hmm.
and so he wasn't able to pretend. Darrow was. Darrow apparently is just an arrogant person. But Titus was kind of still an angry red at heart. Mm-hmm. But then it got merged with messing up his brain from getting carved, and now he's super strong and can do all these things.
Right.
So, yeah.
That he can act out on what he wants to do. He can't, mm-hmm. he doesn't believe in delayed gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Although, Darrow could have gotten there, and he says that in the book too, that if it hadn't been for Roke, if it hadn't been for Mustang, if it hadn't been for Severo, mm-hmm. Especially for Mustang,
mm-hmm.
that he could have become. I mean, that he was going to go kill those two guys in the snow that were threatening to rape Mustang, and he comes in and kills them when they've been hiding out in the cave. And he's planning to leave and go kill them. And she says, don't do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, remember, you're not a monster.
Yeah. He got by with a little help from his friends.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. I think that's good for today. Stay tuned next week. We didn't talk about Mickey. We didn't talk about Quicksilver.
Man. We didn't talk about so much.
We didn't talk about so much. Darrow's mom.
Love Darrow's mom. I want to have a beer with her.
Yeah. Darrow's mom for president.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next week as we pick up with the rest of the Red Rising trilogy.